That's Reputation. I'll just remind you once again, you're listening to KUCI in Irvine, and hit a little theme music. Darkling Eclectica presents a collection of broadcast fiction brought to you by the Darkling Eclectica. Rat's Reputation by Michael H. Payne, Part 8. Just butt out! Triss practically screamed, spinning away and throwing her paws in the air. Taggart could only stare at her back for a moment. He finally managed to say. I just want to help. Help! She whirled back to glare at him. The way you help, you should change your name to Retio! From Love's Bitter Triumph by Sanjan Tanner, South Point Books, Ottersgate, 1729.
Well, congratulations, Grandpa.
Rat tapped a splash of blackberry wine into the glass and held it out. The old mouse took the glass in a shaking paw, leaned back into his pillows.
Thank you.
He took a sip.
But I'd still like to know how you convinced Milene not to run.
Rat tasted a bit he'd poured for himself. Too sweet, but it was traditional among mice after a victory.
Hey, all I did was canvass the neighborhood, same as you would have done if you'd been feeling better.
It had been pretty easy. Everyone liked Grandpa, even those who said they disliked his policies. But as Rat had talked to folks during his 2 days going door to door, that dislike had boiled down to a lingering resentment at sharing the island with the otters. So Rat had shifted tacks, started mentioning the increased goods in the stores, the expansion of the hospital, the water wheel the otters had built to bring electricity to the whole island, and folks had gotten a little more thoughtful. He'd almost been able to smell Aunt Malene's support drying up, and at the first of last week, she hadn't announced her candidacy. A nice, clean victory. Except for... Rat set his glass on Grandpa's nightstand, tried to keep the concern out of his voice.
You should get up, Grandpa. Have some lunch. Kylie's got a celebration party all lined up for later at the lodge, and she expects you to show up for it.
Yes.
Grandpa puffed out a sigh.
I suppose I should.
He sagged into the pillows, got so quiet Rat had to stretch his ears to hear him.
I'm so tired.
He rubbed his eyes, still bloodshot, his scent still dusty, his fur so much grayer just in the past few days. Rat wanted to grab him, carry him up into the branches of the Bailey Oak, and plunk him down in the emergency room of Mercy Hospital. But he kept hold of his Retio face, reached out, touched Grandpa's paw, used a calm, reasonable tone of voice.
Grandpa, please, can't I ask Dr. Swift to stop by and...
No.
The mouse's eyes flickered with a spark of their usual fire.
Nothing against Swift, but I won't be like Asta, all wrapped up in poultices, clawing to hang on and just getting sourer and sourer.
A swallow squeezed his throat.
I'll go when my time comes.
He gave another pale smile.
Not for a while yet, I hope. After all, unless my shriveled old brain imagined it, I just won an election.
Rat returned the smile.
Hey, if imagining was all it took, Aunt Malene would have been in office years ago.
He stood.
So, how about you get up and have some lunch? It'll make Aunt Tyra feel better, at least.
Grandpa took a breath and settled deeper into his pillows, his eyes drawing shut.
Another minute or two, perhaps.
The sudden rattle When he exhaled, made Rat's fur shoot straight up. The Rattler, Nona had always said. Leaping forward, pressing against Grandpa's chest, he stretched his whiskers, the silence absolutely ear-splitting.
No,
he breathed. Then he was pumping Grandpa's ribs, down, up, down, up, down, up, trying to ignore the way Grandpa's head lolled sideways along his pillows, the way the pulse of his heart kept not starting up, the way the warmth was already fading from his scent.
No, no, no!
Then voices, paws on his shoulders, spinning him around, pulling him away, figures moving through the room, Aunt Tyra's face, wet with tears, saying,
"We've called the doctor. There's nothing more we can do, Retio."
Stunned, sitting beside Aunt Tyra till Dr. Swift, dark feathers aflutter, darted into the room, his medical bag slung over his back. But Rat already knew. Grandpa was gone. An arm around Aunt Tyra's shoulders, he pressed his face between her ears and wished everything everywhere would just go away.
Why the Nibbler's pet rat turned on Raymond at the end, no one will ever know for sure. It is obvious, however, that the creature, after being a lurking presence in the Nibbler clan for 10 years, had decided that the old mouse was standing in his way. But it's equally obvious that it was only after carrying out Raymond's orders to kill Bors at the beginning of that fateful autumn of 1727 that this so-called Retio realized how easily mice could die at his claws. The only real wonder, in fact, is that the rat waited as long as he did between murders.
From Vermin, Power, Greed, and Death in the Nibbler Clan Elections of 1727 by Malthus Spinner, Spinner Clan Publishing, 1728.
"I'm a gardener, Retio."
Aunt Tyra wrung the handkerchief between her claws.
"Bors was the politician."
Rat shifted in the chair and took her paws.
"We can't let Aunt Maline be the only candidate."
"Why?"
Aunt Tyra sniffed.
"She'd certainly do a better job than I would."
"Don't say that!"
With an effort, Rat kept his voice down, managed not to tighten his grip on her paws.
"She's not right for the clan. Grandpa knew it, Uncle Bors knew it, Kylie knows it, and I know it. We've got to..."
The rap of the gavel brought his eyes to the Mouse Lodge stage. Mr. Spinner, Ms. Courier, and Mr. Chowder at the table there. What muttering there was faded, and the Spinner cleared his throat.
When a clan head dies, the town charter calls for a new head to be chosen at a meeting chaired by 3 neighboring clan heads.
He cleared his throat again.
So, if any Nibbler of age wishes to speak, please rise.
For a long moment, no one moved. Then, up front, Aunt Maline stood.
"I wish the circumstances were different, of course, but, well, I have no choice at this time but to declare my candidacy for clan head."
She sat. Cold, gripping his chest, Rat turned to Aunt Tyra, but she just pressed the handkerchief to her eyes.
"Anyone else?"
Mr. Spinner asked from the stage. All week long, Rat had let himself think about nothing but this meeting, trying to come up with ways to stop Aunt Maline and stop himself from dwelling on the cold, dusty... Don't think about that. Can't think about it. Oh, if only he knew the town charter better. He looked past Aunt Tyra to where Kylie sat, her head bowed. She'd said maybe 5 words since Uncle Bor's death, and now she seemed more than ever to be walking in her sleep.
"Well,"
the Spinner was saying,
"with only one candidate, the vote by acclamation goes to..."
"Wait!"
Rat heard someone shout. Heads turned, all eyes staring back at him, he realized. He was standing, and the voice he'd heard had been his own. He grabbed for his Retio face, but Aunt Asta, shouting,
"Sit down, Vermin!"
knocked it out of his paws. His bowler hat suddenly too heavy, his bow tie too tight. He fell back into his seat, his whiskers buzzing. Mr. Spinner cleared his throat.
"So, the vote by acclamation goes to Maline Nibbler. She'll fill out the term of her late Uncle Raymond."
He banged the gavel, and Aunt Maline got up, crossed the room to the stage, the unmistakable scent of trouble making Rat's tail jitter. She nodded to the 3 clan heads, then turned to the crowd.
I pledged to help Nibbler Clan recover, not just from the devastating loss of our former leader and his son, but from the unwise policies Nibbler Clan and all this island's Mouse Clans have been pursuing. For generations, we have shared this island and its environs with the birds of the Air Force and Mercy Hospital, with the rabbits of Bracken's Farms, with foxes and opossums and folk of every sort and size. But when newcomers start to threaten our sovereignty, we must be prepared to draw the line. And draw that line we will.
Unable to look away from her eyes, Rat watched them move across to stare right into his.
But first, she went on, we must ask some questions about the pair of tragedies that have brought us to this day.
Her gaze slid away.
Yes, the Mouse Lodge booth could have collapsed on its own, and it's likewise imaginable that on the very day of his re-election, our clan leader should succumb to cardiofibrosis. It's a common enough condition among elderly mice.
Her voice got louder.
But both of these horrible events happened so close together, and with an individual who calls himself Retio Nibbler there, alone and unobserved. And, well, just because it looks like he killed Cousin Bors and Uncle Raymond in an attempt to seize control of the clan, one supposes there might be other explanations for his actions. What?
Rat leaped up, heard a crack, the arm of his chair tearing away in his claws. Movement across the room, Paul Chowder stepping from the shadows.
Officer Hawk is here, Ms. Nibbler.
Show him in.
Aunt Meline didn't smile, but Rat could smell her satisfaction.
We have the prisoner here.
Rat's stomach clenched, nothing but the backs of mouse heads in front of him, Aunt Tyra reaching up, touching his arm.
If you've done nothing wrong, Retio, you...
If!
Rat squeaked. He looked past her to Kylie, but she just sat, her ears folded, her face downcast. A rumble made Rat snap his head over, the door to the larger folks' entrance creaking open, cold air and the first snow of the season gusting in around the huge form of Officer Hawk.
Retio Nibbler! You're under arrest!
One paw on his hat, Rat spun, leaped over the mice behind him, was into the foyer, out the lodge door, down on all fours, streaking across the courtyard. 10 years he'd spent trying to become Retio Nibbler. 10 years, and they were all just going to stand there and watch the Air Force tear him to shreds. A gust through his whiskers made him throw himself to the ground just as Officer Hawk's talons slashed the air above him. The bird shrieked past, and Rat ran, not sure where... No, suddenly, exactly sure where. A plan crystallizing in his mind. One stop to make first, though. Whiskers pricked. He felt Officer Hawk rushing at him in the way the snow flurried over his back. Leaping to the side, he rolled around the corner at Aunt Meline's store, Hawk pulling out of his dive with a screech to avoid the awnings. At the top of Chestnut Lane, the clan house sat dark, but he knew the way through the hedge, across the lawn, flinging up the sash of his window, squirming inside.
Hurry!
He heard Hawk cry.
He's in the clan house!
He grabbed the black bundle from the bottom drawer of his desk, sprang out the window, sprinted for the front gate. Lantern light spattered the hedge, mice shouting,
He's gone crazy! Don't let him burn the house! Oh, how could he do it?
Again, snow burst behind him. Rat dug his claws into the frost, flipped flat onto his back. Officer Hawk whooshed past, a whisker's width above his snout, the bird's trajectory carrying him into the cloud-choked sky. Which gave Rat a few seconds. Jumping onto the gate, he brandished the package at the mice coming up the hill.
You want to say I killed somebody?
Claws spread. He slashed the bundle, shredded his adoption papers, scattered their pieces into the snowy wind.
There! I just killed Retio Nibbler!
The mice in the street stopped short, Cam in front, staring open-mouthed at him. Rat wanted to slash through him, too, smash his face in, pound him into the cobblestones. But he just leaped down, scrambled past Cam into the depths of the crowd, the bow tie damp and loose around his neck. Mice screamed, lanterns flying, Officer Hawk screaming above,
Out of the way! I can't get at him if you're...
Down the hill through the mice, around the corner, the crowd thinning, he spun out of Chestnut Lane onto Legion Street, ran low and close to the buildings to keep Hawk from striking. At the school, he tumbled across the open space onto East Road to another flurry of wings and snapping of talons. Then he was tearing down the block and through the park at South Point, the beach and the river ahead, and a scent, too familiar, a figure stepping from the last tree. Rat pulled up short, his chest heaving, Kylie there, between him and the water, snow in her fur, tears in her eyes.
Don't go,
he heard her whisper. His whiskers told him Hawk was stooping for another pass.
"You gonna stop me?"
he panted out. Her claws bunched into fists, but she lowered her head and stepped aside. Scrambling out onto the sand, he arched his body under the snap of Hawk's claws, sliced into the frigid water, let the current grab him and spin him south, downriver, and away from Otter's Gate.
Roaming.
Ratayo bared his teeth, water dipping from his whiskers onto the deck. "Listen to me if you know what's good for you. The rap I'm facing back there,"
he crooked a claw over his shoulder at the stern of the barge,
"there's no way I'm gonna let some rummy old otter keep me from slipping out on it. So either you take me down to Beaver Pool, or I tear your throat out and take myself, you understand?"
Quaking in his heavy wool jacket, the captain could only nod.
"Smart move."
Ratayo turned then, the cold of the winter night nothing to the boiling hatred in his gut.
"But this isn't goodbye, Otter's Gate,"
he whispered to the darkness upriver.
"You haven't seen the last of this rat."
From The Deadliest Game by Leland Spuckler, South Point Books, Otter's Gate, 1727. Out of the water, onto the bank, the snow under him almost warm. Maybe he'd just curl up here, tuck his ears into his hat, cover his nose with his tail, and take a little nap. No one would care, not the High Ones, the Curials, the folks in Otter's Gate, and the gypsy caravan. So why should he? But a spark of fire in the night above him, and a voice, gravelly and deep.
"Is somebody down there?"
No, he wanted to say, but his teeth were chattering too hard, his throat a solid frozen lump. Darkness moved between him and the firelight, the voice saying,
"Looks like you could use a little help there, son."
With all the strength he had left, Rat squeezed out two words.
"Don't bother."
"Oh, ain't no bother at all."
He felt himself jostled and lifted, something wrapping around him, that voice rumbling,
"You just don't look otter enough to be traveling the river without a boat, especially not this time of year."
His inner ear told him he was moving, the firelight getting brighter, the reflection of it on the snow-covered rocks dazzling him, its growing heat making him shiver and groan.
"There now,"
the voice said, and he came to a halt, felt himself propped against something.
"You set a spell, son. I got some grubs here, too, if when you feel up to it."
Eyes adjusting, he could make out the fire pit now, a healthy stack of wood in the dirt beside it. Dirt. He was inside something, down a hole, it looked like, his hat and bow tie hanging on the roots of a tree trunk above him.
"That dug myself in when the snow started,"
that voice said off to his right, and Rat lolled his head over to see two shiny black eyes in a gray face nearly as big as his whole body, a banded hump of a back rising up above its stubby ears. It took him a moment to recognize the other as an armadillo, the leathery cheeks wrinkled.
Let me get you another blanket."
The armadillo started rooting in a canvas duffel.
"You've pretty well soaked that one through."
Rat still couldn't move, his returning circulation a constant stabbing now. But the armadillo just picked him up, claws surprisingly gentle, despite each being longer than Rat's leg.
"These things ain't designed to be towels,"
the armadillo said, wrapping a dry blanket around him and setting him back down.
"But hey, something I can add to my sales pitch."
"Thanks,"
Rat managed to say when the shivers had dropped enough for him to work his throat. The armadillo had settled into a crook of the trunk's roots, had poked another log into the fire.
"Well, might be I'll need help myself someday."
He turned and nodded to Rat.
"Folks on the road call me Rocky. You get washed off a barge or something, son?"
Rat looked away, rested his gaze on the scuttling flames.
"No,"
he said, not sure if he was speaking aloud.
"I'm not from anywhere. Not anymore."
"Ah."
He heard Rocky's plates scuffle against the roots.
"I reckon I know what that's like."
For a long stretch, Rat watched the fire, the smoke a tang in his nose, its crackle the only sound. He slept some, he knew, since he found himself starting awake every once in a while, a dry blanket around him, another wet one draped over the tree's roots. 8 blankets hung there when Rat roused himself enough to realize he felt completely warm and dry. A soft crunch made him turn, and he saw Rocky taking water beetle grubs from a metal plate. Without a word, the armadillo held one out. Rat wanted to turn away, but the rumble in his stomach wouldn't let him. Taking the grub, he sucked it down. Not the best things in the world, though Aunt Tyra could always... He forced that thought out. He didn't have an Aunt Tyra. He didn't have anything. And he never had anything. Not in Otter's Gate, if they could all turn on him so quickly. Not in the gypsy camp, certainly. Look at what happened there. And before that, all he had were a couple scent memories. A huff of breath beside him.
"Mornings like this," Rocky rumbled. "I swear to my grandma, they make me feel like I've been on the road my whole entire life."
He pushed a tin cup across the dirt, picked up a cup of his own, sipped it.
"Of course, some folks are suited to it."
He grinned.
"These blankets won't sell themselves now, will they?"
The steam from the cup smelled of tea, and Rat took it, held it between his paws, tipped a few drops back to trickle over his tongue.
"Dunno, though," the armadillo was going on. "Maybe I just never found no place I wanted to settle. Maybe there ain't no such place."
Another quick grin.
"But I got a job, a life, some friends. Reckon we all find our level if we got time enough."
The tea slipped warm into Rat's middle, made his shoulders unclench and his eyes droop.
"That's right,"
he heard Rocky say, soft as sand trickling around him.
"You go right ahead and sleep on that."
But a loud crack snapped him awake. The last log in the fire had split into embers, the air colder, the flickering shadows showing him nothing but the pile of wood beside the ring of stones. He pulled the blanket tight, crept over, pushed another log in, and blinked in the sudden light till he could see he was alone in the little cave. The 8 other blankets still hung with his hat and tie from the tree roots around the fire pit, the battered cup of cold tea there in the dirt. But the armadillo and his pack were gone, Rocky's scent barely in the air, like he'd left days ago. Not knowing what to think, not really wanting to think, Rat stood, pulled the other blankets down, made a nest in a crook of the root near the firewood, crawled in, and wrapped himself into as tight a ball as he could.
Claws to scrape a frozen heart, hope as soft and sweet as air, light far above, out of reach, torn apart, lost down the river somewhere.
From Rat's Passage, unfinished poem by Ottavio Magpie, first published in his posthumous collection Scattered Leaves, College Road Books, Beaverpool, 1731. The sun in his fur, Rat drowsed on top of the tree stump. Spring, finally, longest winter he could remember. It had seemed like 4 or 5 months before the river ice had started cracking a few weeks ago, and then its rumbles had collapsed a couple of the rooms he'd gnawed inside the stump. But he'd dug up some gypsum, made plaster, had started reinforcing the remaining walls, until he caught himself. What was he getting worked up for? It wasn't like he was going to stay here. Once the roads dried out, he'd be on his way, wouldn't he? Wasn't that the plan? So he'd settled back to enjoy the music of the meltwaters, and as the days had grown longer and warmer, he'd just let this sweet lethargy take him over. For the first time in years, he wasn't in a hurry. And he never would be in a hurry again, he decided, if he could help it. He sighed, rolled onto his stomach, was just letting his eyes droop shut, when a voice suddenly squeaked over the whoosh of the river.
"Sir, in the tree trunk? Are you perhaps at home?"
Not a mouse voice, he was sure. He pushed himself up, spread his whiskers, and peered over the edge at the water, churning white and green all the way to the opposite bank. No scent other than the spray, no sound but the,
"Sir?"
It came again. From a rock about a quarter of the way across the river. Squinting, he saw a lizard, gray and smooth and maybe as long as his tail, perched there.
"Might I ask your assistance? I seem to have become stranded."
After a long moment of staring, all Rat could think to ask was,
"How'd you even get out there?"
The lizard gestured over his shoulder.
I utilize a series of stepping stones to access this rock for my meditations, but during my contemplations today, the meltwaters rose and flooded over the stones completely. I had nearly resigned myself to a surely doomed attempt to swim when I recalled that you have taken up residence recently in that trunk.
What?
Rat couldn't keep his fur from bristling.
You been spying on me?
Oh, not at all.
The lizard scuttled around and pointed to the far side of the river.
I live there, sir, beneath that large stone at the top of the bank.
The lizard snapped back to face him.
And while winter does reduce me to a somewhat hibernatory state, in my wakeful moments I couldn't help but notice the smoke from your fire.
He cocked his head.
I called out, hoping you might be home, and now that you've responded, I will ask you please to journey upriver to Otter's Gate and fetch some rescue personnel.
Rat blew out a breath.
Hold on, I'll be right down.
Darkling Eclectica Presents has brought you Part 8 of Rat's Reputation by Michael H. Payne. Music and narration were by Michael Payne. Darkling Eclectica Presents is a production of KUCI in Irvine.